When it comes to commercial banking, relationships matter. At Associated Bank, we've got you. With a dedicated team of relationship managers helping you secure financing to best serve you today and tomorrow. Visit associatedbank.com/commercial. Member FDIC.
Dafan Village in southern China has been churning out fake Van Goghs and Da Vincis since the country opened its economy to the world. But 40 years on, and this place, like much of China, is struggling with an identity crisis. In its heyday, Dafan produced 75% of the world's copycat paintings. But with the global economic downturn in 2008, demand dried up.
Barack and Michelle Obama are the most admired man and woman in the United States. A Gallup poll published Thursday asked Americans to name the male and female they most admired. The December survey found that 17% of respondents declared former President Barack Obama as the man they most admired, with President Donald Trump in second place with 13%. Former First Lady Michelle Obama was named the most admired woman with 15% of respondents, making it her first time to top the list and beating former First Lady Hillary Clinton, who has held the title for the last 17 years.
This year, we've seen an unprecedented trade war kick off between China and the United States, and this has led to what could become the biggest disruption in global trade in decades.
What's new here is the scale and the scope of this dispute. These are the world's two biggest economies. These are economies that are very closely linked with each other, but really it's also about how China does business, things like IP protection and state support for industry, that kind of thing, which the U.S. increasingly takes issue with.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome to The Opening Bell. It is 5:08 a.m. here on 720 WGN. I am WGN TV's Paul Lisnick in for Steve this morning. Good to be with you as we get ready for the New Year's weekend. What's coming up this morning will be a talk about this crazy market we have been living through for the past few weeks, this week especially, up and down, and we're going to try and get a handle on it. Most importantly, we're going to get a handle on it for the view of what is going to be happening in the new year as we look ahead, what is ahead for us. And in our second half hour, I'll be joined by State Senator Sue Rezin. You know, it looks like Springfield accomplished nothing during the year, right? But the truth is, they passed over 250 bills, and many of them are new laws that will be impacting you come January 1st. So we're going to take a look at some of the new critical ones so you can get ready for the new laws here in Illinois as of the new year. But first, on the Associated Bank Market Desk, looking at U.S. markets, the Dow Jones up about 260, a little bit over that. The S&P 500 up just over 21. The NASDAQ up over 25 points. Over in Europe, the FTSE up over 105 points. The CAC up just under 78 points. And in Asia, the Shanghai up just under 11 points. And Hang Seng up a little over 25 points. Some news that is happening this morning. Sears, the 125-year-old icon, has 24 hours to survive. Its last shot at survival, a $4.6 billion proposal put forward by its chairman, Eddie Lampert, to buy the company out of bankruptcy through his hedge fund, ESL Investments. But as of Thursday afternoon, Lampert had neither submitted his bid nor rounded up financing. Should Lampert submit a bid, then Sears advisors would have until January 4th to decide whether he is a qualified bidder. Many CenturyLink customers across the U.S. were without internet Thursday amidst a lengthy outage that even affected some Verizon customers. The outage began early in the day, but by late Thursday night, the company tweeted that its engineers had identified a network element that was affecting services and expected to fully restore services within hours. And U.S. stock futures weaved in and out of negative territory early Friday after a wild four-session week of trading that has seen big swings for major indexes. The S&P 500 set to end the holiday shortened week with a 3% gain. Well, joining me to talk about this crazy week, Wednesday, one of the best performance days ever. Tuesday, one of the worst Christmases ever. Boy, that's a lot of volatility. Mark DeCambra, markets editor at marketwatch.com, is going to make sense of all this for us. Mark, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure to have you. So, listen, I don't have to tell you how crazy the market's been. I actually took a little snapshot of what this last week and a half has looked like. December 19th, down over 350 points. The 20th, down over 460 points. The 21st, down over 400. The 24th, down over 650. And then the 28th, it's up 1,000. What is going on?
Yeah, I think that's the 26th up 1,000.
26, yes.
Yeah, and then yesterday, one of the biggest turnarounds in the markets ever, with a nearly 900-point intraday turnaround for the Dow, and most of the other indexes as well, seeing kind of an intraday pivot from a negative territory to a pretty sharp close. So even on an intraday basis, we had a pretty sharp turnaround on the day. But at the end, it was sort of a good sign in some ways. Doesn't necessarily say the market's super healthy, but it was a good sign to see that follow through from December 26th, the day after Christmas is. Biggest surge for the Dow and some of the other markets, to see the market end in positive territory again the follow through. So even though it was pretty erratic on an intraday basis, it's there's some optimism to be taken from yesterday's action.
Well, and of course, yesterday where we saw, you know, way down in the morning, it recovers during the day. I guess my question is this. How much, ordinarily, I don't think that politics or if the president tweets something, I don't really know that that has been impacting the market. I have seen some analysts who have basically tracked this week, especially on the 24th, on the day that the market was down 650 points. They were able to note that actually, when the president tweeted late morning, the market began to take a dip. Are we in a period now where the president is making comments about the market, about the Fed share? Is that having an impact on the market itself? And if so, is that unusual?
Well, it's a confluence of things, really. The market's pretty fragile right now. You got a Federal Reserve that is in the process of normalizing interest rate policy from a super low level to a more normalized level in their estimation. We've had about 9 interest rate hikes since 2015. From post-crisis era policy, again, one in which it was pretty low, near zero. And that's created some friction along the way. In addition to that, you've had a bunch of different issues that have cropped up from this partial government shutdown, geopolitics that have been in the minds of investors, from Brexit to other matters, a global slowdown, even though here in the U.S. domestically, the economy seems pretty healthy. There's still some concerns about the possibility that we're at a late cycle where recession might take hold in 2019 or 2020. No one really knows, but some folks think that might occur sooner than later.
And, of course, the administration, through people like Larry Kudlow, say, don't worry about it. The R word is not around the corner at all. You know, you mentioned the Fed raising rates and that has gone up under Jerome Powell, Jay Powell. And it's really to no one's surprise. I mean, you know, all analysts seem to suggest get ready for the rate to go up a few times this past year. It's going to go up a couple more times. It's no surprise. But what is, of course, different is the president. And I don't mean to turn political with you, but I'm just trying to understand the impact of it on the market. The president, who's going after the Fed and you know, basically saying they're not handling the market correctly, they shouldn't be raising the rates. The politics aside, my question is, do those kinds of comments, such as the Fed shouldn't be raising rates, when analysts predicted they would, how does that play out as it impacts the market?
Well, I think as I tried to kind of set up at the onset, you've got so many factors that are kind of eating away at market confidence. And to boot on top of that, you've got a period in which you're already going to have thin volumes this last week in December going into January. You're going to have thin volumes. You're going to have people presumably selling to harvest tax losses to their benefit. Because if you sell your losers, you can write them off in taxes. So there's some of that taking place. You've got a fragile market that doesn't necessarily know how things are going to play out in the coming year. You've got all the things that we've talked about earlier. And then you sort of combine that with the view about the outlook for 2019, the possibility that corporate profits may not be as robust on a comparative basis as they were this year or the quarter prior. And those just make for a market that's a little bit more sensitive to any little thing, including political comments. I will say this, though, that previously politics as kind of like, active as they were, and from comments from Donald Trump to other factors, that they really haven't jolted the market that much in the grand scheme of things. It's been more about trade wars, which is another factor. The trade spat between the U.S. and China and the U.S. and other major developed economies as well have been a factor in creating some uncertainty for the marketplace.
I do want to talk a little bit more before a break about the current factors that could be influencing it. You mentioned the partial government shutdown. And once again, it is just a partial shutdown. But to me, the volatility on that point is no end seems to be in sight. And you can't even, the White House will tell you, we don't know. This could go on for some time. The Democrats will probably say, well, when we come in on January 3rd, we are going to reopen the government because that requires the Senate and the president to go along. What impact, if any, is that shutdown having, or is it just one of those, again, political factors going on right now, because it seems to be politically based, that the market just accepts?
I would say in toto, all of those things combined make for a market that's pretty unsettled. I mean, if you put together a cocktail of things that would be, problematic for the market, but in and of themselves, they wouldn't necessarily be that much of an issue. Individually, a partial shutdown wouldn't be a big problem. Individually, Trump making comments about the Federal Reserve would, only get a passing glance by most of Wall Street investors. But again, when you think about the sensitivity of things and the market's starting to unravel even before these things occurred, and you've got a situation in which you're going to be a little bit more sensitive to market news, to politics, to even partial shutdowns, and to your point, maybe that you're hinting at. Usually, you wouldn't react to a partial shutdown, but this is not the usual time. And prior to all of this taking place, we had markets start to deteriorate on a technical basis. We had a breakdown in which markets started to fall, and now they're trying to find their footing. And that's the environment in which they're trading right now.
I've heard some analysts say that Wall Street and Main Street are out of sync with each other. What's your view?
Well, it seems that on a overall basis, confidence has fallen back a little bit. Consumer confidence, we had a reading yesterday. And I would say, we're seeing some softness in retail on the economic data, some softness in housing. But the Fed has said that they believe that, the jobs market still is pretty strong. And right now, the market isn't exactly where it should be. It isn't necessarily aligned with some of the more positive data that we're seeing. So in some ways, there is a disconnect, especially when you see the kind of moves that we're observing now. Sometimes the view is that on Wall Street, the view is that the market can be the sort of the best economist and can presage problems that might occur in the economy.
Is January 1st or 2nd, is there something magical about that? It's a new year and traders, investors sort of see it as a new day. Or really, can we look at what's going on this holiday week and say that's simply getting us ready for more to follow?
Well, I would say based on conversations I've had with Wall Street investors and strategists that we can probably expect more volatility like we've seen already. I think we've talked a little bit about December and this last 5 days in December, and I think kind of the early part of January are what's known as the Santa rally. Part of that is investors positioning themselves for the 2019 year, the new year, and some of that hasn't taken place in the way that it usually had. So we might be able to see somewhat of a pickup in the early part of the year because by most measures, stocks are oversold, which is also part of a dynamic that helped lift the markets in recent trade. So we'll see if that plays out in the in ordinary times. Again, you'd have strategists and portfolio managers start to pick and choose where they're going to be investing for the following year, and that should start to take hold. And the other thing to think about is just corporate profits and where those are going to be. Markets are going to start thinking about that sooner than later as the year kind of kicks off. So no, it's not a magical start January 2nd, as it were, but it should start to see some dynamic in which investors are thinking forward, looking about how to invest and how to be smart and strategic, tactical even, about this new market regime where we're seeing more intraday swings, more volatility overall, and just some level of uncertainty about the economy and various aspects of the market.
One of the other factors that will come into play, I think, are the tariffs, which have gone into effect. Those don't seem to be going anywhere. We aren't quite sure where the president will take tariffs in this coming year, especially in our interactions with China. What kind of impact does the uncertainty of the tariffs play, and what kind of impact does the simple existence of the continuing tariffs play in the market?
Well, as you mentioned, uncertainty has been sort of the name of the game when it comes to tariffs. It creates a hornet's nest for corporations because they're not sure to what degree they're going to be impacting their company. So a lot of investors have been uncertain about that. A lot of CEOs have been expressing expectations that they will see headwinds due to tariffs. We do have news that there's supposed to be mid-level meetings between the U.S. and China in regards to tariffs and the possibility of some rapprochement in that regard. So we'll see how that plays out. That could be a positive for the markets. Prior to the swings that we're seeing now, trade or worries about trade or trade wars or tariff spats had been the biggest single mover for the markets.
If history is any guide, I know recovery cycles last about 10 years, which means we're basically coming to the wrap of the current 10-year recovery cycle. Does history have that effect for you? Do you look at that and say yes, and that's one of the reasons that recession or bear market could be around the corner, because simply historically it would be time for that?
Well, I don't, because I'm not an economist, but some of the folks that I talk to take a look at that. I mean, just as a way to think about history and a way to think about reversions toward the mean. The expectation is that there will be, after the longest bull run in the market in history, that dates back to March 2009, the market itself will eventually pull back and see a bear market. By some measures, people think that we're close to, if not already in one. The economic cycle has, again, been on a similar trajectory, 10 years of expansion. And as we talked about earlier in the segment, 2019, 2010, 2021, there are economists predicting when the next recession will be. It's not necessarily something to fear. It's hard to predict that, to be sure. But it is a normal expectation that a pullback occurs. When and how severe is the bigger question.
And of course, we had the tax cuts last year, this past year, and so. But those don't really, people don't actually know what's going to happen with their tax cut impact until they start doing their taxes. That is just in the coming months, as April 15th is around the corner. I'm just curious. I mean, the word, of course, has been that the tax cuts have been great for business, great for corporations. What impact might we see the tax cuts have on corporations, and the impact on individuals if it turns out people don't feel it the way they thought they might?
Well, yeah, the tax cuts were put into place late into 2017. So individual investors have already had the pleasure of trying to scramble and figure out how it was going to impact them. I guess there's with the fullness of time, 2018, we'll see how that plays out this year as well. But from a corporate standpoint, it has been seen as a sort of sugar high, and it wasn't clear how corporations would benefit. Thus far, we've seen a lot of shared buybacks. So the excess money that corporations garnered from that corporate tax cut has so far been used to buy back their own shares, given the market's volatility and downturn. It may not have worked out as well, but that is one of the reasons, that corporate tax cut is one of the reasons why folks who are smarter than I am think that any recession was kind of forestalled.
All right. I'm not sure anybody's smarter than you are, but I appreciate the insight you shared. Mark DeCambra, markets editor at MarketWatch.com. Happy New Year, my friend. Thank you for joining me and giving some explanation for what we're dealing with.
Thanks for having me, and Happy New Year to you.
All right, thank you. It is 5:32 on the opening bell.
Hi, this is Catherine Davis from Chicago Inno with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know. Wearable technology developed by researchers at Northwestern University was front and center recently in a new Gatorade commercial featuring tennis superstar Serena Williams. The ad campaign features Williams sporting a wearable patch designed by Northwestern researcher John Rogers that analyzes the chemistry of your sweat. Chicago cannabis company Cresco Labs has acquired two new medical marijuana dispensaries in Illinois, Medmar Rockford and Medmar Lakeview. The two locations are Cresco Labs' fourth and fifth dispensary acquisitions in Illinois. Cresco Labs raised $100 million in funding in October. And to celebrate National Candy Cane Day, Chicago Hotel EMC2 used its robot concierges to develop candy canes to guests on Wednesday. Its two robots, named Cleo and Leo, also bring guests towels, dental kits, and other toiletry items. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at chicagoinno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
And good morning again. Welcome to the opening bell on 720 WGN. I am WGN TV's Paul Lisnick in for Steve this morning during this holiday time. So, Springfield, Illinois has an image of not accomplishing very much from time to time. That's certainly been the image lately. But the reality is that over 250 bills were passed this past year, and many of them might just impact you starting on January 1st. So I wanted to get you up to speed on those things you should be up to date with and knowledgeable about. And so joining me to do that is our state Senator Sue Rezin of the 38th District. Senator Rezin actually joined the House of Representatives in November of 2010, then got appointed to the Senate, where she has been ever since, working hard for her folks in the 38th District. And Senator, welcome to the opening bell.
Good morning. How are you, Paul?
I am good, and I appreciate your joining me. First of all, by the way, maybe the best news of all is the bill, or are the bills you guys didn't pass, which is to say no new taxes, no new fees. We're getting away clean in 2019 from that.
Well, certainly. Oftentimes, we just play defense in Springfield, and you are correct. There were no new taxes passed in this past session. However, it should be on your radar for next session. We hear a lot from our colleagues across the aisle about new taxes, but we did get away last session with no new taxes, which is a good step for the state.
And there's a budget. That's kind of news as well. I mean, let's get the good stuff out.
Well, it is, and it's unfortunate that having a balanced budget is headline news. But yes, we did have a budget. We felt that it was balanced for the first time in many years. Well, I'm starting my ninth year, so this is the first budget that I've supported. I felt that was a balanced budget, was a good budget, did not have the budget did not include additional, you know, government spending, expanding government programs, and no new taxes in this budget. So if we work together across the aisle, things can get done. I hope that we can do the same in this next session with the new assembly coming in.
And as we, I'm getting ready to get to kind of the specific new bills, but the other thing I want to talk about, because I know it's very important to you, we haven't really accomplished too much reform. And I know that's kind of number one on your agenda, along with some other things, but you want to see more reform in the new legislative session as well.
Well, we would like to see reform. I mean, we're a party of less taxes, more reforms, less regulation, and allow the private sector to be a companion and help us to grow our economy by encouraging companies to invest in the state of Illinois, which creates jobs, which allows people to stay in the state and not migrate to other states, and pay property taxes and taxes by staying in the state. So something that we advocate for, but until businesses recognize that this is a state to invest in, less reform, less regulation, less taxes, bring down our property taxes, encourage businesses to invest here. Unfortunately, right now, Illinois is not on the short list for these businesses when they go to invest.
All right, well, let's take a look at what life will be like in 2019. And this one kind of actually is a bridge from 2017. Education always seems to be the number one topic that comes out of every senator's mouth, every representative's mouth. Education, education. And indeed, there was a really historic reform package passed back in 2017. It continues to play out.
Well, certainly by passing the new education funding reform bill in 2017, it has changed the scope of how we fund education. The old formula has been in place for almost 30 years. So passing a new formula that was a bipartisan, bicameral effort was a huge feat in itself. This is the first year that we have the new formula in place, which allows school districts that really need state dollars most by creating a tier system will receive more money from the state, meaning they have a low EAD, a low property tax base. They should be receiving more money from the state. This funding formula creates that equity throughout the state. Many schools, especially in my district at Swell, I've talked about it since I've been in the Senate, there were many schools that were receiving the same amount of money from the state who have low property tax base in conjunction with other very property-rich schools, and that wasn't fair. So by passing this funding formula, we have new money coming in. We've said that it's a priority on both sides, both Republicans and Democrats, to improve and to invest more money into education. As a result, this year we have $350 million in new money going into education, and there's a commitment by both parties each year to add additional money back into education.
So the $350 million you're talking about essentially for K through 12 education, I do want to ask you about higher ed because, boy, higher ed has really taken a hit over the last period of years with you know, many institutions really, you know, struggling through all of that. And Illinois has actually lost a lot of students to colleges and universities outside of the state. And the legislature did step in and try and fix that in a variety of ways, one of which I want you to address is the change to MAP grants.
Yeah, well, this is huge as well. We talk about this out-migration of people and students to other states. What's happening in our state is that universities from other states are coming into our high schools, and they're saying, hey, look, we're offering you a better financial program to go to our out-of-state schools. And oftentimes students are looking at what's the best value, and they're making their decision to go to a school in another state. Unfortunately, these students oftentimes do not return, and they stay in that state, get a job, and their family follows them. That's a problem. We put together a working group, bipartisan working group, and this working group came had several recommendations. One very important law that you just talked about, which is allowing people who apply for and receive MAP grants to receive MAP grants for 4 years. Currently in our state, before that bill was passed, you could only apply for and receive that MAP grant every year. And it's very difficult then to put together your financial package and know how much money that you will be receiving. This certainly other states do it. When you receive a MAP grant in other states, you receive that MAP grant and it's prioritized for 4 years. You know how much money you'll be receiving. And the bill that we passed in the state to allow MAP grants to be for you to receive MAP grants for 4 years is a huge step in the right directions for many college students. So that's just one bill that we've passed in a larger group of bills that we hope addresses that brain drain of our students going to other colleges in other states.
With just a couple of minutes left, I want to, you know, kind of do a lightning round of a few bills that have passed. Anybody that knows me knows that I'm all about pets, so I'm going to use host priority and go to this one first. And that is the legislature has stepped in to help pets who are in danger by giving law enforcement officers some power.
You know, this is a bill that you wonder, why do we have to pass a bill in order to allow this? But yes, this bill allows first responders to rescue pets that are in danger, you know, in a car that's too cold, a car that's too hot, and rescue those pets, break into the car, rescue the pets, and also take the pets to the vet if they need medical assistance.
For gun owners, a new bill regarding the waiting period for purchases and also an ability to flag dangerous gun owners. Talk about those.
So the first bill extends the 72-hour waiting period. Currently, if you're applying for a handgun, you have to wait 72 hours. This bill adds many other guns, all guns, actually, especially assault weapons. And then also the second bill you talked about allows family members to petition the court for a court order for a family member that they feel is posing significant danger to himself or to anyone else in the community and have his FOID card revoked after due process because they feel that they're a danger. And who best to know that than the family member that lives with this person and hears them speak or is maybe privy to their social media and see something that really concerns them.
All right. For people that want to find out about other new laws that have passed, they can go to your website, I imagine, and Illinois, the state of Illinois website as well.
Yes, they can. They're listed, and 250 new pieces of legislation going to effect January 1st.
All right. State Senator Sue Rezin, thanks for getting up. Thanks for joining me to share with our listeners the new laws that are coming up. I appreciate it, and good luck. In the new session of Springfield, you're Republican. We'll have a Democratic governor. We'll see how life goes.
Thank you, Paul.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
And good morning again. Welcome back to The Opening Bell. This is Paul Lisnick in for Steve Grzanich on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. U.S. market's looking very good. Dow Jones up over, will be up over 260 points for the open, S&P 500, NASDAQ, both up over in Europe. The DAX, the FTSE, the CAC, all looking up and good today and over in Asia. The Shanghai and the Hang Seng also up moderately well this morning. In addition, there are we want to take a look at life with Orion Samuelson, agriculture, commodities, the man, the myth, the legend. He's here. He's live. Orion, pleasure to be with you.
Well, good morning to you. And, you know, talking about the new government taking over in Illinois, there's a cabinet appointment that I'm excited about this morning. Because the former Illinois State Senator John Sullivan, he will be the next director of the Illinois Department of Agriculture, selected for that post by Governor-elect J.B. Pritzker. I've known John Sullivan for a couple of decades at least. He served as the represented the 47th district in Western Illinois from 2003 to 2017. Then he retired and went back to his family's auction and real estate business in Hamilton, Illinois. But he served as the co-chair of agriculture on Governor-elect Pritzker's transition team. And he will take over for Raymond Poe, who was appointed by the Republican Governor Bruce Rauner. my acquaintanceship with John is basically based, besides his politics, but on the Western Illinois Threshermen's Reunion in Hamilton, Illinois. John has been a big booster of that event. I've attended it a couple of times at his invitation, and so I'm looking forward to covering agriculture with John Sullivan, the Director of Agriculture for the state of Illinois, upcoming in the Governor-elect J.B. Pritzker's cabinet. And then another note this morning that doesn't have much to do with markets, but one of my favorite county fairs, the Sandwich Fair at Sandwich, Illinois, is getting bigger. They purchased another 60 acres to make room for more activity at the Sandwich Fair that always starts the Wednesday after Labor Day in September every year. So I'm looking forward to that expansion by the Sandwich Fair, Sandwich, Illinois. And market-wise, fairly quiet day yesterday in agricultural commodities, particularly in the grain market, not much going on. So we'll see if the first week of January, when the Chinese and U.S. trade negotiators start talking again, if maybe we can get some light there. But not doing much right now from the standpoint of price movement. And that's what's going on. We'll be with you throughout the morning to cover Wall Street, and it is looking like a pretty good start, Paul.
And Orion, I want to wish you a very happy and healthy new year. I can't wait to hear your voice in the new year as well.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, too. And now at my state of maturity, I put healthy new year before I put happy new year.
A healthy, happy new year to you, Orion Samuelson.
Thank you very much, and to you, too.
All right. Now on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for today, Friday, December 28th, 2018. The Institute for Supply Management releases the PMI index this morning. The National Association of Realtors shares the pending home sales index. Ad Vantage, or ADD Vantage Technologies Group, Inc., and Bridgeline Digital, Inc., both report earnings by the end of the day today. And so just some of the things that could move the markets on this Friday, December 28th, 2018.